Welcome to Unspoken Conversations with Candace, where we talk openly about taboo topics in order to spark difficult and uncomfortable conversations, where we allow a safe place for anyone who has had trauma to be heard. Unspoken Conversations with Candace is about speaking your truth by using your voice because you matter. Welcome to another episode of Unspoken Conversations with Candace. It is Self-Care Saturday. We are in my studio here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, recording. And I am so grateful to have this amazing fellow IT leader in my studio, Carmen Santiago Keenan. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes. So I'm going to do an introduction to introduce you. I always believe in introducing you to the listener. So when they hear your bio and I tell them about a little bit about your story and who you are as a person, I think it just kind of helps people kind of relate, right? So I'm always about introduction. So let me introduce you to our audience here. So I love this quote that you put in your bio. So failing upward, how faith, having the courage to push through uncomfortable situations and perseverance will help you cultivate resilience and shape your destiny. I think that's so true on every level. So from an early age, Carmen had to overcome obstacles. Being born to a drug addict and later being part of the foster care system, she had no choice but to learn how to become resilient. However, the learning part would prove more difficult than most for a neurodivergent superhero on the spectrum with dyslexia and dyscalculia. Did I say that right? Okay, perfect. So Carmen is the founder of IT Girl Solutions Incorporated, a tech-savvy brand that will be launching a new podcast. Congratulations in 2023. Her love for process improvement led her to her partnership with IBM as an IBM Automation Cloud PAC RPA process mining business partner. Girl, that's a lot of words.
It is a lot of words.
But so important in the tech space.
We need to automate that whole process.
That whole sentence. No. With a focus on optimizing workforce solutions. Currently, she has a senior advisory role for healthcare IT leaders. Carmen is passionate about IT. She provides the best solutions for her clients with consideration of how diversity plays a role in that world. Carmen focuses on how these three things come together and how companies like IBM, Microsoft, Oracle, and other IT giants can make real change happen in IT. Working with customers and partners, Carmen shares her passion and ignites multifarious opportunities, inspiring constant forward growth. And as a healthcare IT professional, by day is what I do. My podcasting is on the side, right? Telling everybody else's stories. But that's kind of the power of connection. And when I met Carmen, we actually got connected through a mutual, I would say friend, Randy Walensky. And so I'll do a shout out to Forever Media. Randy Walensky and I got connected. He reached out to me on LinkedIn. He read my book. He learned about my podcast. And our instant was connected, you know, instantly. And then we followed up. You know, Randy had to lead the movement. Him and Jamar Jones had a big conference in August that I was there. And so with Randy, just him kind of taking the leap of faith and reaching out to me, not knowing me, then that's how he connected me with you. And so I just want to say thanks and shout out to Randy for, I'd say, like I said, divine design, bringing two Latinas together, two Latinas that work in healthcare IT, and two Latinas that have powerful stories and testimonies, and women of faith that are here together in the studio to share these stories. And when Carmen and I then got connected on LinkedIn, she was immediate about, when are we going to do this? When are we going to get together? And I picked her up from the train station. We went out for dinner and drinks, and it was an instant connection. And I told her this whole divine design, like our paths were meant to cross. And I said, you have to be on my podcast. And the one thing that I just want to let you know, Carmen, is what stood out about you to me just in those few hours that we spent together. You said to me, Candace, we can talk about a lot of things, but follow through is important. And if we don't follow through, it's just an idea. We have to take action. And that was like, man, I said, she doesn't mess around. Like, and I was like, this is my kind of girl. And so here we are. And when we sat at dinner and we shared our personal stories and our just professional journeys, because they are a lot alike, you know, we realized like we're so connected on so many levels that it's, we can't explain. But all we knew was that God put us together. So with that being said, I can't wait for you to share your story to my listeners here.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, Randy, that was such a godsend, similar story. He found me on LinkedIn and instantly connected me with you. And so, Randy, thank you for that. And I don't know, I feel like in the season of my life and how God has brought me through all the seasons of my life, that when he tells me to go or to meet, like he did with you, and a lot of things in my life that have led me here, I just knew that, okay, I don't know why we're connecting. And quite frankly, when Randy connected us, it was so quick. And I was in the middle of work. It was working and all the things. I didn't even have a chance to really delve into. And then you sent me the messages. Oh my gosh, you're a Latina in IT too. And I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, let me stop for a second. I'm like, yes. I'm like, this is insane. It sounds like there's another me, but she's older and wiser a little bit, just by a little bit, and in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is awesome. I've got to meet this woman. And so here we are. And I'm so grateful for that. And I'm just, yeah, I'm so grateful for this connection. And I'm really grateful for your book, for your courage, for sharing your story. And I know we'll delve into some of that a little bit later.
We can talk about it now. I mean, so just for the listeners, as you know, by day I'm a healthcare IT professional. I work in healthcare IT. And I started this journey, and my book is titled Unspoken, available on Amazon, or you can visit my swag store on my website. I always do the plugs. And so Unspoken, really one word to tell my story because I wasn't supposed to tell. And so I shared my story with Carmen, and she read the book. And I'm just so thankful that you want to provide me a little feedback, I think, on that book.
I do.
I'd love to hear about that feedback.
Yeah. So for me, when I read the book, I started it on the train ride home after we met. And I live in Illinois, you're in Milwaukee, so it's like an hour and a half train ride home, you know, Chicago. And I started reading it and I was like, wow, the writing is incredible. I mean, you have a great way of just bringing your audience right there. And then as I kept working through it, it got to the harder stuff, right? And I had a very visceral, literally got up and threw up, actually.
Oh my God.
I literally had a visceral sick reaction. And I'm like, and at first I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I thought I ordered gluten-free stuff. Maybe I had gluten in it. I'm like, what did I eat? I only had two sangrias. I'm trying to go through, why am I feeling this way? And just like, I just got flushed and just this visceral reaction. I was like, okay. Stepped away from it, picked it up later on that weekend, same reaction. And I was like, prayed about it, knew that I had to push through it. But what I realized as I pushed through it was that, we'll jump into my past and my story, and this will probably be a good segue into that, but that now as I'm heading into 43 in January here, that I can no longer suppress that part of my abuse. You know, people know about my physical abuse. You know, I ended up in foster care, and we'll delve into that here in a minute. You know, my biological family, my adopted family, even my ex-husband, partners, therapists always encouraged me to talk about it, look into it. And I always said and held tight, that never happened. It never happened. And for what I just could not allow. Everybody else knows, but for whatever reason, me and my psyche, I closed that off. And so what your book did and why it's so impactful and so important. And again, I just want to really thank you for being so courageous to write what you wrote. It's not easy, and it's not a pretty story. It's not a feel-good story. Your honesty of how you felt going through everything, but it was the first time that somebody was able to communicate things that I wasn't able to really put language to. But it was also the first time that I was able to finally kind of put something to the memories and the things that I was suppressing. And so it really, I mean, although it triggered me, it also prompted me to, you know, like now I'm getting back into therapy because I am about to be 43 and I am a single woman and I have been married. I have been divorced. And I, as much as I've healed and I'm still healing, what this did was bring to light that there's still work that I need to do, especially when it comes to healing that relationship. God has really had me in this place of relationship with father and being hurt at the hands of a man and viewing my godfather as this horrific person, right? This abusive person, if you will, right? And how that's colored my life, even my behavior, how I behave towards people. Because if I feel like God is this dictatorship, angry person that's constantly punishing me, you know, I didn't always realize that that's kind of maybe how I would react in harshness to things, you know, like Old Testament God, I'd like to call it. But it just got me to this place of, okay, I need to deal with this because I'm not willing to. I've already walked 40 years around all these other mountains. And thank God that I've gotten healing for those things. But I'm not willing to go another 40 years around this mountain that I need to look into, work through, heal, so that I can continue to grow forward. And so I want to thank you for that. And I know that it's not, A, that's the intention of your book. So I really wanted to thank you to that for that, because I know that that's why you wrote the book, was for women like me. Women that maybe didn't even know how to tell the story, or that maybe that there was even a story to tell. But because of reading this, it triggered something, you know, that really is making me have to deal with it. And I should have, I should deal with it. You know, I'm ready to deal with it. Well, I shouldn't say I'm ready to deal with it. I should say that I'm praying to God to prepare me for the healing for it, because I don't know how it's going to show up, but I know that it's showing up. You know, and that it's time. So thank you.
Carmen, that means so much to me. When I was on that journey, there were so many times that I was afraid I wouldn't finish. Oh my God. Getting emotional only because I remember that, you know, like, what difference is this going to make? People telling me like, well, why do you want to tell it now? Or you didn't do anything to them, or you know, just that whole like negative energy or doubt or fear. And really, I think I was scared because I didn't want to hurt my mom. I mean, those feelings were so real. And reading your story on screen, and we're in IT, you work on a computer all day, and seeing those words like on my monitor and then going through that editing process, and then, you know, it took me 3 years from 2017 to 2020. And the reason why I know I finished in 2020 was because I got to slow down. This pandemic had me in my house, you know, quiet and still. And I'll just do a shout out to my editor, which was one of my sorority sisters, Cian. And she actually was in my ear paragraph by paragraph, line by line, to help me make sure that whatever story I was telling, that it was concise and clear and that the message was there. And she was very like in my head and asking me questions of clarity through the editing. Like, so I contribute a lot of the final content, because she's like, you have everything there. You just might have a little bit extra fluff here or there, but let's make it, you know, what it is. And so I just have to give her the thanks for allowing to work with me through that. And then I remember going through that process and crying and like her asking questions about content and then actually exploring the message more. And that was so therapeutic. And then when it finally came out, and actually here we are recording on November 19th, 2022. My book is 2 years old today.
Oh, congratulations.
This is my 2 year anniversary of my book.
Happy anniversary.
Unspoken. Happy anniversary, Unspoken. And I remember like Jeremy Chavez wrote the foreword, and he kept texting me like, is it on Amazon yet? Is it on Amazon yet? And then it was. He goes, Candace, it's on Amazon. And I remember getting up, going to my mom's room, and like I was white as a ghost. And she's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, my book's on Amazon. Like, it was it. This is it. This is like the moment. Like, now my life literally is an open book.
Yeah.
And I always was like, everyone kept telling me it's going to be impactful. And that's all I could ever ask, right? Is for you like to sit here and tell me how impactful it was to you. It just means so much to me.
Well, oh my God. Oh, and it means so much to me because I mean, this connection, and that's why connections are so important, right? And relationships are important, although they're difficult. Oh, so difficult. Every single one of them can be, right? But here was a LinkedIn connection. literally turned very quickly. I think it was like a Monday or Tuesday. By Friday, I was on the train and we were having dinner and drinks and connecting over business and podcasts and life and all the things.
Mm-hmm.
To reading your book that evening, to then pushing through that weekend, that impact within that week, that shift will always be a huge shift in my life.
Mm.
You know, and I hope in your life, I hope
it Carmen, absolutely. Right. Right. And so I just thank you for giving the listeners just kind of, again, from survivor to survivor. And I'll say we together, we are stronger and we are louder than silence. And I'll contribute some of those words to NCAN. I'm now part of the National Foundation of Ending Child Abuse and Neglect. I am partnering with this foundation. Shout out to Lori Poland. She's the CEO and founder of that organization. And to kind of, again, align myself with causes and things to shine a light on this. Why do the podcast? Taboo topic. It's uncomfortable. It's difficult. It makes people uneasy. Why? We have to come together. We have to spread this message and we have to change this narrative where we can't just continue to bury it, suppress it, keep it under the rug. I did that for 40 plus years. I mean, throughout those 40 plus years, I'm 51 years old now, and I finally know what I want to be when I grow up, right? Not only an advocate for myself, for me, Candace, but for others, right? That I've, thank God that you said what you said, that it touched you, it impacted you, it changed that, it processed for you to say, all right, I need to do some more work. And that's all I can ask for is that impact. It's not about the book sales. It's not about, oh, just monetary in the pot. No, it's about the message. And truly, I feel like this is now I turn my pain into purpose. I turn my pain into passion, my mess into a message, all the tests into their testimony. And I want to get into your story. So enough about Unspoken. Right, no. We've done the plug for Unspoken. So make sure you go get a copy. Love your support. And make sure if you are getting a copy, write your Amazon review, because that does help any author out there, you know, striving. And so just thank you again for letting me plug that. So now we can get into your story, because your story needs to be told. I know, you know, when we met, I was like, oh my God, I thought my story, but your story. So I'm going to give you the floor, Carmen, and I want you to take the listeners through your background, you know, growing up, your mom, your being born in this world, the dynamics, your foster care, all your experiences, because you are going to impact somebody with this episode.
Oh, well, thank you. No, to God be the glory, because I'm not even supposed to technically be here. I mean, I've clinically died. I've the running joke. I don't know how funny it is, but running joke with my friends and families that I'm like a cat with the nine lives. Now I've superseded that. So we're just on borrowed lives now. So God definitely has a plan for my life, and I see his grace and his handprint over it throughout this whole, you know, time. And people ask me that, like, why do you have this faith? And every year, people that believe in growing forward, right? Growing forward, that's really one of my big talking tracks, is keep growing forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we do visualization. We do, you know, we plan for the next year, our goals and all the things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so some people have a word. I am a statement person. So this year, you know, my statement was fearless faith. And what did that mean? And it, you know, and I explain to people, I'm like, I have this fearless faith because I've seen God's favor over my faith. You know, when I was born, my mom was a beautiful woman, a young mom. I have her namesake. Carmen, she was many beautiful things, but she also was a survivor probably of a lot of different traumas and ended up leaving the house and at an early age and developing bad habits. So she became an addict. And by the time she was pregnant with me, she was, you know, living outside of my grandma and step-grandfather's home. And so when I was born, I was actually born 4 pounds and addicted to cocaine. So I was already a very finicky and anxious by nature person, you know, kind of like a little Tasmanian devil. And it's funny, it's like my baby picture, you know, the first, your newborn picture, my dukes are literally up. And I have this like pissed off face. I'm just, oh man. And I just have my dukes up. Like I just knew like, ugh, this is going to be rough. And my mom did the best that she could a month into her having me. And oh, by the way, before this, she didn't want to have me. So she was actually contemplating having an abortion because she knew she wasn't ready to be a mom. And my biological family, my aunts, encouraged her to keep me. My godmother Connie, she was only 5 years older than my biological mom. So they grew up more like sisters than aunt and niece. I mean, they go club, you know, all the things. And so she was like, no, you know, have the baby. You need to. So she had the baby, me, the baby. And a month in, my grandparents got a call from a friend of hers. My grandparents actually have my own Wisconsin story. So they lived in Janesville, Wisconsin. Yes. Okay. I lived in Janesville. For the first 2-3 years of my life, and then we moved back to Chicago. But they got a call. We haven't seen your daughter, Carmen. She left the baby here. The baby's out of food, diaper, all the things.
Oh, my goodness.
This baby's not our responsibility. They were literally, if you don't come pick her up, we're going to throw her away.
Oh, my God.
Like, they were going to legit throw me away. She left me with a bunch of addicts, right? I mean, at least they knew how to get a hold of my grandparents.
Right.
Anyway, they went. They drove the 3 hours or whatever, picked me up, brought me to Wisconsin with them. My Aunt Amy was a teenager at the time, living at home with them. And then my mom kind of went back and forth. She was never allowed to come live at the home. You know, sometimes I wonder what would have happened if maybe that would have been different. But anyhow, and, you know, most of my memories about my mom was everybody just loved her. She was this light force. She was a twig model. She was beautiful, a musician. Just everyone just loved her. And I just never had the opportunity to really meet her. I remember waiting for her to show up to come see me, but she just never could make it. And then one day I was 6 years old and we were coming home. It was Easter weekend. We were coming home from a family party and there was a note on the wall. I'll never forget it. It's like yesterday. And let my grandma know that my mom was in a really bad car accident in Florida. Mm. And by the next day, we found out that she was dead. And so my mom died when I was 6. She died. A drunk driver hit the car that she was in. She was in Florida. She was actually singing and cleaning her life up. And the car that she was in, she didn't have a seatbelt on. And she went through the back seat, through the windshield, and died instantly. And so, you know, that even though I didn't know my mom, definitely shifted everything and my grandma and just family dynamics and things. But through this, my grandparents had always raised me. So it didn't change that, you know. But my grandmother was a lovely woman. I love my abuela. And my grandfather was who he was, but he was very abusive. Mm. I mean, like, would make me kneel on cheese graters when I was little until my knees bled, kind of abusive. My body's covered with stories and war wounds of all sorts. Yeah, so I was definitely a very angry child. I found out at the age of 38 that I was on the spectrum, which is crazy to me because I've had many therapists in the interim.
Yeah, yeah.
But as we find out and as I'm learning more about this part of myself, people that are autistic or on the spectrum, especially women, girls, and boys, but especially with women, so misdiagnosed. Mm-hmm. So for me, autism showed up as being a horrible child, being hard to pacify from the stories that I hear. They couldn't get me to, I'm very sensory is a big thing for me. I get overwhelmed very easily, but they chalked it up to, as I got older, she's bipolar. She's got ADHD. I've been every polar there is.
Right.
I self-diagnose and actually push a diagnosis of multiple personality. Like I thought I had different personalities because actually part of autism too is we don't know how to be. Mm-hmm. So we mimic and we learn by watching and doing, which is weird to others, right? Like, why is this person being like me, right? But that's kind of how we learned. So unfortunately for me, my abuela loved telenovelas. All my children, all that jam, Spanish, English. So a lot of my persona was.
And we're back.
So
we had to take a little bit of a pause. Oh, my goodness. So it's like Carmen and I are going, do we tell? Do we not tell? So we had a little situation in the podcast studio. So we had to take a quick little debrief. So we are back. And that's a fearless faith moment for us, which it was a good girlfriend moment. Let's just say that.
Well, I don't mind sharing. Listen, any of you guys that know me, and actually this was my talk track to the keynote I gave, I'm one of those people because of my neurodiversities and just because I'm me. I have a great way of falling, going upstairs. I fall all the time. And I'm super animated. So I'm over here telling this super emotional story and my hands are flapping, you guys, right? So Candace has an amazing studio. I'm sitting on
a bench chair.
It's like a bench chair. And I'm over here just flapping away, right? talking about like my telenovela personality and how I'm thinking, you know, that I have all these multiple personalities, but really it's autism. And I'm flapping away, but you guys can't see this because it's a podcast. And I legit start falling backwards off the bench. But it was like in slow motion because I'm talking to you guys about my telenovela, my multiple personalities. I'm like falling and I'm like, am I legit starting to fall? So then I start flailing harder. Like I'm going to like now create like a wind beneath my wing situation and fly back up and not fall. Candace is watching me from across the way where she's sitting in like slow motion as I'm falling backwards.
I'm trying not to laugh. So
I fall on my butt. Because it's Saturday and I have to at least fall once a day. It's like a thing.
Oh my goodness. That
out of the way. And I'm happy to report that I'm also her first guest to ever fall on her butt while filming a podcast. So,
oh my God. Well, we don't have video, which thank God we don't have video. But can you imagine, girl, we could have went viral on TikTok.
Right.
But no, so I'm sitting here watching and all she was saying going down is I'm watching her fall in my studio. And I'm like, oh my goodness. She's like, did I mess up your podcast? Your podcast. I'm like, no, are you okay? So we had to take a pause. So, okay. You know what? Humor, laughter, it's good for the soul.
It is. And sometimes, you know what? Levity is great. Oh. So thank you, Lord, for adding that little bit of levity. It was getting a little heavy.
Oh,
but anyhow,
my God.
Yes. So that brings me back to my quirkiness. No. But at 38, I found out it literally was a life-shifting year for myself. I had found out that I was on the spectrum. At the same time, I had found out that I was allergic to most pharmaceutical drugs and counting. And that's kind of when I had to make my choice. You know, I was presented, we're both in IT, we're both in process improvement. We both look at data.
Mm-hmm.
So I was presented with this data. And at this point, going through what I had gone through and the abuse and, you know, when we get to the healing stuff, you know, I definitely believe that our bodies, our trauma manifests in our bodies as illness. So for me, for a very long time, illness looked like mental illness, but then it took on physical symptoms and ultimately led to a lupus diagnosis.
Mm.
So I spent many, many years in the hospital in my 30s, late 20s and early 30s, battling all sorts of crazy things, literally fighting for my life at times. But anyhow, here I am, 38, long time living life. Thinking you're crazy, thinking you're unhinged, thinking you're bipolar, tripolar, unipolar, all the polars, thinking that maybe you have multiple personalities or something, anything to put a language, not necessarily label, but language to what was happening. And so here I am, 38, and 17, we found out when I moved into the foster care system, you know, and I'll hook it back to that story too, but we found out that I had dyslexia and dyscalculia. And dyscalculia is where you invert numbers. So it's like dyslexia is with words, and I have a little bit of that, but mine mainly plays with the numbers.
Okay.
So here I am in technology, surrounded by numbers and things.
Data.
But you're
numbers.
In data.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But that was intentional to rewire my brain.
Mm.
Neuroplasticity, you know, all the things. But anyhow, I looked at the data and I was like, okay, I can choose to take the persona of being sick. And people would be like, and rightfully so, I've been in and out of the hospital. I've had, at this point, heart monitors, like all sorts of crazy things. And people could probably get behind that. Like, yeah, she could be like, hey, I got lupus. I got this. I got that. I'm just going to be sick and just be sick and take on that mindset. Or I could be who God made me to be and push and be like, okay, well, maybe. And we're both in, you know, in the medical field and I love my doctors and all the things. But I knew that I had to seek other types of practitioners that might not be within the scope of the necessarily traditional medical model, you know, so things like gut health. And so I decided that I was not going to be a sick person and that I was going to figure this out. And as soon as I made that declaration with God and decided to do that, God opened up all the things. But to hook it back to the childhood stuff, I was being raised by my grandparents, my abuela, very much like your mom, didn't like confrontation, but I grew up in a yelling house, very physically abusive. He abused my grandmother. He abused me. He abused other people. But also, there's that love and the family dynamic. It's very toxic, right? Mm-hmm. And we lived in the inner city. I grew up in Fullerton and Cicero, northwest side of Chicago. My grandparents worked very hard, you know, to put me in Catholic school so I didn't have to go through CPS. But I always struggled through school. You know, I was a great student in a lot of ways, but then once math and science and things started to get more difficult and nobody understood. I mean, nobody knew in 1980, 1985, 80, you know, the 80s, what it's almost 2023 and they're just kind of starting to understand what being on the spectrum and autism, all these things are, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't blame anybody.
Well, and then layer that with your trauma.
And trauma,
and layering
right?
it with trauma, which, yep. you know, like, again, back then when I described, like, we didn't talk about it. We weren't trained. Yep. I mean, just all of that.
Yep. Absolutely. It was just a hot mess. So right before junior high, my grandfather wanted to get us out of the city. And so we bought a house in Glendale Heights. We had family in Glendale Heights. That's about 30, 35 minutes west of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the suburbs, you can't go to school beaten up and upset, you know? So that's how DCFS kind of ended up getting involved with an incident that I had at home with my grandparents. And then I ended up in the foster care system. Luckily for me, I only ended up, which was super scary. I mean.
And how old were you again?
I was 13.
13.
Yes. Okay. 13. And I grew up, like, my grandparents didn't let me, we didn't do sleepovers unless it was at my tia's house. Like, we just didn't do that. Mm-hmm. We didn't go out. We didn't, you know what I mean? That's just not what we did. Mm-hmm. And so to go from not ever leaving my family structure or my, you know, if I slept over, it was at an aunt's house.
Right.
To then being placed in a stranger's home.
They knew where you were.
It was crazy. Right. It was very scary. Right. And at the end of the day, even though you're being abused, it's your family and you love your family and it's what you know. And it's hurtful and scary, especially when you're a kid, to be pulled away from that. And so there I was, this kid, being placed in these homes, and I only went through two homes before, and then also I, you know, went through a stint of being placed in, like, inpatient because they also had nowhere to put me. And, you know, the foster care system, I don't know how it is in Wisconsin, I'm assuming probably very similar, is overwhelmed with kids, and who wants to take in teenagers? So there I was sitting in a hospital, and I had this opportunity to interview. Literally, my first interview in life was to interview to be a foster kid with my now adopted parents, with Paul and Jill Keenan. They had an organization in DuPage County, Illinois, called Open Door for Teens. It was their ministry. And they were the only family that wanted to take care of the teenagers, teenage girls more specifically. And so there was a bed that was about to open. And they interviewed me, and I remember my dad looking me in my face and so scared. He's like, well, why should we allow you to move in here? And I just said, look, I said, I know if I'm given the right situation and resources and opportunity, I can make something of myself. That much I knew.
You sold yourself at 13.
At 13. And I've been doing it ever since, right? Mm-hmm. Hustling for my worth.
That's right. Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I'm great at sales, right? So, but yeah, that was my first interview, and so grateful that I was able to sell myself there into that situation. And I definitely put my parents through the ringer. I mean, I ran away, all the rebellion, right? So that's why when I read your book, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, somebody else has gone through it. And I just, it was very healing for me.
Good. I'm glad. So, that's
again, thank you for that.
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, I'm reading this Rebel Without a Cause, and I'm like, oh my God, yes. Because there's so many things tied into this, right? And when you're seeking love, even when you're being abused, whether it's physically, sexually, all of the above, emotionally.
Financially. But any of it. All of that.
There is this underlying of sexuality. For me, it did play out a lot of finding affection and love, you know, through boys and being sexualized. And I was actually, because I was touched when I was little, I ended up gaining a lot of weight. So I went from being this cute little kid to gaining a lot of weight. So I actually weighed more as a, you know, by the time I was in sixth grade, I weighed 160 pounds. Mm. So I was this big, angry, chubby kid. And I was being made fun of and all these things. And, you know, like I said, I weighed more then than I do now as a almost 43-year-old woman. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm learning that that was my defense mechanism. When I moved into the foster home, my parents were like, oh no, you need to go do stuff. We don't sit here all day and eat. And, you know, so they made me go walk and make, you know, so I lost 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. In that summer between eighth grade and freshman year of high school. So when I went into high school, nobody recognized me. Now I was like this hot, skinny girl. And let me tell you, then I wielded it the other way, right? Because with that came this new power, this false identity, this new, even though I wasn't super sexual at that time, I was still learning, like, oh, I can wield. Now I went from being the fat girl that was being made fun of and nobody wanted to really date, to this hot girl that nobody remember, you know, because I had left when
or everybody wants to be with
or everybody
now.
Wants to be with mm-hmm. now. But I left my friends. Like when I left eighth, it was very abrupt. Like when I went into foster care, it was literally in the middle of eighth grade and nobody knew what happened. Like I was just gone. One day I was in school, the next day I was just gone. And so, and I'm very grateful that one of my best friends, Sarah, you know, was a part of my life then, even though we weren't friends at the time. Now she's one of my best friends and she's one of those people that knows me pre and post, as I call it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, my high school years, I fought. I got kicked out of high school my freshman year twice. I mean, I was just bringing it. I always joke around and tell people my parents, my foster parents didn't have ADT put in the house to keep burglars away. They had it put in the house to keep us foster girls in. Every time I raised a window, it would be go beep, 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 window in blah, blah, blah room, you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, we definitely figured out how to rig it. Sorry, mom and dad. But, you know, kids, we figure
we
out
find a way. We find a way.
But I find it interesting now that I am a public speaker for Illumity.org. So I drive now, right? And I drive and I speak to kids in high schools and underserved communities, kids like myself, right? And telling them, I was you, man, mm-hmm. you know, and encouraging them to get into the STEM field. You know, as a Latina, there aren't many of us. There's more, but we need to keep building these pipelines and being intentional about bringing opportunities, right? And so, but I do find it funny, right? That I am standing with these kids, but then I get to share and they resonate with that.
Absolutely.
Because I get to tell them, listen, I got kicked out of school. I was you, you know, that's why I'm here able to share with you the grace of God and opportunities. And that's why I'm carving out opportunities for you.
Right.
But I can't make you take the opportunities, but I can show you how to get there. Right.
Right. And regardless of, like, I always say your past doesn't define who you're meant to be. So basically, yes. whatever journey you're on now, that doesn't have to be the rest of your life. Right.
Yes.
You're a testimony yes. of that. Yes. I'm a testimony yes. of that. So again, there's just so much power in that. Oh my God.
Yes.
This is amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, you know, I worked through that. Then I thought I was a grown-ass woman and got emancipated. Well, I ran away and got emancipated.
And how old were you for that? That was 16?
I was 17, almost 18 when I got emancipated.
Okay.
And then...
So now you're just completely on your own, independent, doing your thing.
And then I moved to the city, was working in healthcare. I was actually working and making good money at the time. I mean, I was like 18 years old, making 20 bucks an hour, you know, mm-hmm. got my own place, met my 26-year-old bartender boyfriend at the time, ended up getting pregnant by the time I was 19, very much then walking and towing the line of generational strongholds. You know, my grandma, so there's five Carmens in my family. My great grandma, Carmen, you know, she was 13, came from abuse. You know, when she met my abuelo, you know, she was 13 when she got married, having babies 14, 15. That's how they did it in 1926, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she comes from abuse, you know, and then she had my abuela, Carmen. You know, she was 15 when she had my mom, Carmen. Then my mom had me, Carmen. And then my uncle Tony has his daughter, Carmen. And then my daughter, Lily, is upset that I didn't name her Carmen. And so, you know, when we talk about generational strongholds and we see these things in our lineage or patterns, if you
mm-hmm.
will,
mm-hmm.
of things that our bloodlines do, you know, so here I was 19, pregnant with this baby, had no idea, was playing adulthood, literally had no idea how to life. And again, because I was really good at pretending in a way, right? Because everything was mimicked, how to life,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't really knew what it take to actually apply it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hot mess, right? And so there I was, 19, having babies, trying to be married. And, you know, we ended up getting married and I had my daughter at 22 and then ended up divorced by 25, you know, and went through different... It's by the grace of God that my kids, honestly, are as amazing as they are. Because through that, I mean, they did when they were younger, because I was so misdiagnosed. And they didn't know that I was allergic to meds like they do now, because we didn't have the technology that we do now to test for these things,
mm-hmm.
you know, at a DNA and molecular level that we do now. I mean, I was so over-medicated, but I was having horrific reactions. I was constantly an inpatient. They had to get me off of these medications that they were medicating me and literally poisoning me. So... You know, when my kids were little, they saw a lot of instability because these medications were making me bipolar, manic, depressive, crazy. Now I'm happy to say that I am totally only plant-based medicine for me. I have my prescription from the doctor and I live in Illinois. But, and even that was hard for me to, you know, to even want to take, because when I tell you 38 was very impactful, when I made that choice, I made that choice. Mm-hmm. And that meant gut health cleaning. That meant like all the things. And I stopped every medication that I was on, everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm not on anything now. And, you know, whenever I get sick, it's really hard because I do have a severe allergy to most medications, antibiotics now, like now, especially now that we took everything out of my system, mm-hmm. I can't even take an Excedrin without ending up in the hospital.
Wow.
So for me, really eating organically as much as I can, living a clean life is what is going to help me. Plant-based living, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I eat my meats and even I love my meat, but.
And I love that you're saying that because I like my girls, they have taught me mm-hmm. more about that aspect of being healthy, right? Yeah. Mom juicing, detoxing, yeah. teas versus coffee. You know, even my partner has talked about that and he's always like, you gotta take care of yourself. You burp a lot.
Yeah.
He's like, so your gut's not completely healthy. Prebiotics, probiotics, yeah. all the things. So yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
But unfortunately, so this is why what you're doing, what I'm doing, you know, those of us that learn what we learn and then want to give it out into the world.
Right.
When I learned all the things, I started journaling and I actually called it the Metox. So my brand, I do have a brand that I'm spinning off. So TM,
hey.
The 30-day Metox. And we actually tested it out on a Facebook group during COVID.
Nice.
And it was amazing. And what I did was I started bringing the practitioners and the people that I was working with. I was learning so much stuff like vagus nerve regulation. Do you know that there's a nerve that runs through your body that's connected to your ear that if you do certain one, if you learn how to breathe properly, we're not even breathing properly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start there. But if you learn how to do the specific massage for this vagus nerve, it literally helps regulate your whole body system. It can help lower cholesterol, sugar, all these things, but they're not telling you, especially right. in the brown and black communities, we're not being taught all these things, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go where I live in Geneva, Illinois, which I love. There's a yoga studio. You know, there's all these things. There's a juicer. There's clean, healthy living. I walk out of my door. That's all I have.
Mm-hmm.
In the inner cities, we're not seeing these things. We're not having these conversations,
right?
We're not talking about breathing properly, gut health, you know, how to work on stress regulation. What do these things mean? How it all interconnects, mind, body, spirit, right? Mm-hmm. How it all works together.
Yes.
And so I'm really, that's one of my passion points. And that's why now that I'm in healthcare, which was a missing piece of my IT puzzle, I'm so committed to health equity
mm-hmm.
and bridging these communication gaps between understanding our health and giving and explaining that to different cultures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What does this mean?
Right.
And how is this going to shift lives for people to learn these things?
And to teach the children, teach the other generations, the next generation coming after us. Because,
yes.
I mean, I'm 51. You know,
I'm 43. I'm not a spring chicken over here.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, I mean, I know I take better care of myself now than I did even 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so kind of, I think as you're talking about this journey that you went through, that's kind of been probably your healing journey, part of your mental health journey.
Yeah.
To me, that just kind of helped impact you because then you transitioned already to your professional life, how that all ties into your message now.
Oh, I mean, people that have been walking with me for a long time and even my colleagues, if you knew me even 8 years ago and we were at conferences, I was hopped up. I mean, my doctor, who I love, you know, and again, this isn't a knock on doctors. We're both in the medical field.
Oh, absolutely. No, no,
no. I love my doctors and all the things.
Yep.
This is just my personal story.
Mission story, you know, right?
I was on a steady cocktail that was a hot mess. I was not my best self, but I was able to keep up with clients. I was on 40 milligrams of Adderall. I was on 5.5 milligrams of Xanax to offset the Adderall. They had me on 10 milligrams of antidepressant. Like, I was a hot mess. I was a functioning kind of hot mess.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get things done, but I was still a hot mess.
Right.
And you can definitely, who I am today is definitely different than who I was then. And you move differently through life, the healthier that you become.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I'm able to show up to work is different. When your mind is clear, right, you move differently. When you understand yourself first and foremost, when you have a way to put language around these things. Like now that I understand my brain better, I understand and learn more every day what overwhelms my brain and mm-hmm. to give myself grace with that. But it took going through all of the craziness. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've survived bullets. I have not always made the best choices. You know, for me, self-medication, trying to offset what the medication was doing, played a role in that. Self-medicating through physical relationships and drugs, sex, rock and roll, all the things in my early 20s, through my 20s. I didn't really develop a professional life until technology came into my life in my 30s, and it shifted my whole life, mm-hmm. everything. Because until then, I was on this hot mess train. Mm-hmm. It was a cute hot mess train, but it was a hot mess train. And when I was given the opportunity, that's why I loved as well when you thanked, when you began your story in your book, and when you thanked those that placed you and gave you your first opportunity to where you are now in your career. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's why what we do is so important to bridge that yes. gap and to yes. bring these opportunities, because you were, I think you said 17, 19 when you got into healthcare.
Workforce, 19. And then I got into IT when I was like 33, mm-hmm. 34. And then got my bachelor's and my master's. Yeah. But when I remember going from working in the healthcare, I was in like reception area, mm-hmm. billing, revenue cycle, operations, managed care. And then I went, they always call it the dark side when you cross mm-hmm. to IT. But I went into IT and became an analyst, business analyst, and then tech analyst. And then from there, I said, I want to be a leader in IT. And in order to do that, you needed a piece of paper, right? You need your degrees. Yeah. Went back to school, but I was able to apply school to work and work to school. So it was the best of both worlds. But I remember what made the difference for me is making $14 an hour in one department, but then going to IT, making $19 an hour. Mm. That was a huge shift for me to think the possibilities of providing and granted, I was getting child support. Randy was in the kid's life, but I still felt single, still felt alone doing this on my own. And I was my only income. But again, it takes a village. I believe in that. My mom, his family, his mom, Diane, and rest in peace, Diane, and then his dad being my supplemental income. If I needed anything, my mom was my number one. What do you need? She worked overtime to give me what I need. And then his family was always like helping with daycare and providing for my girls. And so IT did set the course, those people along my journey. And I always say, like, I always credit other people, but I know I did the work, right? I worked hard, but I modeled other people. I saw things in people that I'm like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And they also believed in me before I believed in myself. So that's why I really, when I wrote the dedication, girl, it was probably like 20 pages long, but I had to cut it down to like the 2.5 that I did give. But it was like, just, I live in gratitude because some of those people are still in my life today. And when they see me, they're like, Candace, I'm so proud of you. And that's why I'm so glad at the end of the book, I closed out with full circle blessings. So it was just kind of like my life full circle. And you know, Carmen, you're telling your story and it's like, girl, you need to write a book because your story is just as impactful. And that's why I'm so glad that our paths have crossed and, you know, this healing journey that you began, that you're on, this, the mental health, the aspect to your personal life. But let's get in transition into our faith, because I think both of us are rooted in our faith. I had a foundation, and I was sharing this as we were prepping for the podcast, how sometimes I feel I have my relationship with God. I know that. I'm into my devotionals. I'm into my prayer. I do my worship on my own. And then sometimes when I'm in circles with women that are, I feel more in their faith. And there shouldn't be this comparison, right? It shouldn't be a comparison thing, but I always feel like I'm inferior sometimes. I feel like am I an imposter? Or am I a fake? Or because maybe I don't agree with everything. Again, because of my trauma, like, you know, I go to a Catholic church just because I was born and raised Catholic. Do I believe that? Yeah, in the Catholic, there was some bad things that happened and you know, with priests mm-hmm. and even with nuns. And I see documentaries and I'm just like, dang, that happened there too. You see it in Hollywood. You see it in movies. But to me, that's just anybody that gets in that position of power that abuses it is just wrong, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, because I know I have my faith, like it allowed me to forgive because I'm not perfect. You know, my cousin Stephanie always says, we are perfectly imperfect, but you are fearfully and wonderfully made, Candace. You are, like, she's, her business is his masterpiece. We are all his masterpieces. Like, so don't ever like undervalue who you are. Like, you are worthy, you know? And so I struggle with that. So let's transition into our faith, you know, because I know you, when I was talking with you, I was like, dang, man, she's just doing the thing.
It's the Lord. First, you know, I keep it vertical. It's the Holy Spirit. Honestly, that was a great segue because you said, you know, I am worthy. And that brings it always back to hustling for our worthiness. People that come from this type of trauma think we feel like we are not worthy. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly feeling like we have to hustle for our worthiness. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend, Sarah, uses that term when it comes to like building your own business. But I take that and I was like, but really that kind of applies to how we behave as well. Like when we're feeling like we're hustling for worthiness, whether that's hustling for love, a job, whatever it is, right? And I'm constantly having to take a step back and check myself. And I need to do it more often than I do actually, because I do find myself more often than not recently hustling more for my worth. Then I have to be like, whoa, what is this about? Mm-hmm. For me, my faith is very personal because I have clinically died. And I have, so for me, Jesus showed up for me very personally. Mm-hmm. And he's shown up very personally for me twice. So, you know, I survived the gunshot wounds. I was wrong place, wrong time, 21. I was leaving a club I had no business being in. There was a shooting. I was in the crossways. If this person was to walk up to me today and be like, I shot you, you know, I'd be like, oh, mm-hmm. I had no idea. Because it was not like, oh, I did something. I'm like thug life or something. Mm-hmm. But whatever. Anyhow. And then when I was 27, 28, I was in a relationship with, quote unquote, the perfect Christian man. Helped him build and was helping him build a credit card processing company. Helped him close almost $2.5 million in the Latino market. He was a lot older. My parents loved him. He went to church, the whole thing, right? The whole thing. And there was an instance there where point of it is he was embezzling money. Because the way that I'm built, I am the person that's always going to confront people. Mm-hmm. Like there's people that nobody will ever say Carmen's passive aggressive. I'm very aggressive, aggressive. You know, and to a fault almost, you know, like I'm the person that will always be like, I don't know. Let's, no. You know, so I asked him, I said, hey, what are you embezzling? You know, we had people knocking on our door, literally like checks about, you know, what's going on? He snapped and proceeded to try to choke me to death. Hmm. And so.
To silence you, I'm assuming.
He went crazy. He was going to try to kill me. He was literally like, he dragged me toward, it's a story. I don't even want to get into it now, but anyhow. All this to say that by the time the cops came, they had to tase him twice to get him off of me. Like he was choking me to death. The way that he fell, as he was choking me, literally, I remember crying and praying. I was like, really, Jesus, this is the way. I'm like, I survived bullets. I've survived, you know, cervical cancer. I mean, the way that God has saved me is insane. I mean, like I said, bullets, cervical cancer. My mom didn't even want to have me. I was 4 pounds addicted to cocaine. Like all the odds against me. Shot 4 times. When I woke up, the only thing that happened to me, I have four bullet holes on my back. I have one dead on my spine. One nicked my spine. I woke up to like 20 plus doctors in amazement. They said any bullet that would have killed you missed by half an inch, any of my vital organs. I couldn't walk for like 3 days. They thought maybe I was going to be a paraplegic. Obviously, I'm not. Thank God, by the grace of God, I walked out of there 4 days later. And I mean, I am the but God story. So I'm there praying. I'm like, this is so messed up, Jesus. Like, I'm going to go out like this, like a punk with this guy. Like, I was mad, you know, and I don't know. Me and Jesus, we got this thing. I do get a little thuggish. So he kind of talks to me a little like Snoop Dogg a little bit. I'm not going to lie. That's my Jesus voice. So we just go at it. I'm like, really? Like, oh, but Lord, I'm so sorry. You know, if this is my time, I'm sorry. You know, take me, blah, blah, right? All the things. And then right in that moment, you know, as I felt the white light over me, the cops came and they tased him. And the cop and who tased him was also a believer. And when I came home, I was throwing up and choking to death on my own vomit. Mm. And they tased him and they had to do it twice. And so the way that he fell on my body caused my left arm to clear break. So I have a whole metal left elbow.
Wow.
And, you know, had to go into rebuild my life mode, right? Moved in with my parents and then also kind of, I don't know, didn't want to deal with that trauma because now I went from being child abused to now being a quote unquote victim of domestic abuse. And it was, I mean, my life is very Googleable, people. I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there, Google me. I mean, it was a trial in the county that we lived in. He ended up going to jail. He was supposed to serve 7 years, only served 3. When he came out, I had to wear a monitor because he had to wear a monitor. They thought he was going to kill me. It was a lot. I had my 2 kids that now had to deal with this, and it was a lot. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, so that wife, that's for me why my faith is so personal, you know, but God has given me a servant's heart my whole life. I mean, when I went into foster care, I was introduced to a different version of Jesus. You know, I was raised Catholic, but I didn't really know God and the Bible. And so my parents were, you know, Christian, non-denominational, which within itself is kind of a denomination. But, you know, so I was introduced to being able to build a relationship with Jesus in a different way. Mm. And so I became a missionary and went on Project Served and worked with the Navajo And I was never one of those. I was a foster kid. I would never go in. You know, I was getting kicked out of high school, smoking cigarettes and doing all sorts of things. You know, I was surprised that I didn't burst into flames when I went into youth group. To be honest, I'm like, oh, Jesus. Oh. And I wasn't one of the kids that grew up in, I mean, I stuck out like a sore thumb. Me and my other foster sisters, we were the only black and brown kids, and we were the foster kids. And we were in Wheaton, Illinois, which everybody looked like they walked out of a Gap commercial, you know, and here I was with my curly, crazy Chicago Latina hair, you know, city self. And, you know, so there's all those things, right? But, you know, God brought me to this place and I'm so thankful for it because it taught me so much. Mm-hmm. And being there as a missionary, I actually called my grandparents or my parents, my foster parents, think God wants me to be Navajo. Like I'm not supposed to go back to Wheaton. These are my people. I was never one of those people. I would never tell you your faith or who mm-hmm. you are is wrong. Mm-hmm. Mine is better. No, that's not how I work. I know why I have mine, mm-hmm. but I pray every day I wake up and I say, Lord, ease, joy, and glory. How can I walk in ease? How can I create joy? How can I walk in glory? And then I break it down. What does it mean to be in the Bible? It says, my burden is light. My yoke is easy. What does that mean? Because I'm a highly anxious person by nature. I was 4 pounds addicted to cocaine. My natural self is anxious, mm-hmm. you know? So Lord, what does that mean? You know, and what does it mean to create joy, to be joy? And what is it to walk in glory? Mm-hmm. And how can I give that to others? And I have people come up to me all the time, people, dogs, babies, adults. There's something about, I say, it's the Holy Spirit. It's the Holy Spirit. It's not me, because who I am, my carnal self, I'm a horrible person. I'm up at 4 every morning because I need 2 hours to straight up. I need to pray. And even when I pray, sometimes I'm mad. I'm swearing. I'm like, it's horrible. Girl, I will leave Bible study. And if somebody cuts me off, I'll be like, oh, no. And I'm like, oh my God.
Lord, you just left Bible study.
I'm like, right? And I'm like, oh, Lord. And then I'll send my girls. I'll be like, pray for me because I just left you guys. And I'm over here cussing at people already. You know, I mean, but that's why I need Jesus. Mm. That's why I have my faith. I'm not Jesus. And I'm not here, you know, as we were talking, when you said you feel like you don't belong, I get that. I grew up in Wheaton, Illinois, where there's this very cookie cutter version of what a Christian, quote unquote, good Christian woman should be. Mm-hmm. The Psalms 31 woman, which I love one of the pastors that I have, Pastor Dan from Life Church in St. Charles, Illinois. He always said, he just did a talk on that. And he's like, men, by the way, the Psalm 31 is not about a woman. This is how the church should be, right? Mm. But I mean, it's great principles. We should all strive to be like Psalm 31. But it's really unattainable. That's why we need the grace of God. We need to understand the forgiveness of being covered by the blood of the Lamb. Mm. But I would never tell. I mean, I go and I worship with my friends. I'm worshiping Jesus, but I'll go to a mosque. I will go and I speak. I'm a public speaker. And I'm in the DE&I space. You know, I advocate for inclusive workspaces, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm always going to advocate for bridging the gap between resource and education, upskilling our workers in technology and trades. You and I, now we're going to be doing a lot and filling this pipeline with getting our Latinos and other minorities into the healthcare field. Mm. But it took going through all of these things.
Yeah.
And at the age of 38, like when I tell you, when I made that choice to either, God says, every day I give you the choice between life and death, take life. That was literally yet another life and death moment, because every day we have that life and death mm-hmm. moment, right? Mm-hmm. How do I choose to be today?
Right.
I could choose to be the sick person, or I could choose to live and figure it out. This is the harder route. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
Having to look at your stuff, having to take accountability, having to be like, your trauma's everything. Yeah, all that trauma is all well, good and done, but I traumatize myself too. Mm. The process of undoing and being and learning and all the things, right?
Right, right.
And I screwed up my kids in the process. I was a young mom. Yeah, maybe I was doing the best that I could, but sometimes the best that I could looked like not just being on all these medications that the doctors had me on,
you know? Yeah.
And like I said, it's by the grace of God, my parents, the village that was around me to help me with my kids. Mm-hmm. They're amazing humans, but they have their traumas because they had a mom that was traumatized raising them, trying to be grown mm-hmm. when I was a 19-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. I've got a 23-year-old and a now 20-year-old. And an 8-year-old. And I tell them all the time, you're still a kid. You mm-hmm. know, and it's crazy to them to think, God, you were married to our dad and had us at this age. Because it's crazy to them to think, oh my God, to be responsible for another human. How did you do it? And I'm like, by the grace of God. Mm-hmm. You know, I had no business being a mom.
Yeah.
I had no business doing any of that stuff. But here we are doing
it. Here we are.
The grace of God. And so for me, it's very personal. And that's why, like I said, when we move, but here we are. And also to just bring this point in and why God is using you and using people like myself. We're not here for the saved. Like I told you, we're here for the Mary Magdalenes. We're here for women like us. When they read our story, they can say, oh my God, she might have had shame. She might have had this. She's an overcomer because he helped her overcome. It's through him that she overcame. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be perfect. Nope. God doesn't want me to be perfect. I strive to be obedient. I don't want to abuse his grace. You know, I'm learning to die to my flesh. And that is hard because my flesh is carnal and I'm Puerto Rican Italian. And like I said, I am more likely to tell you to go jump off a cliff, to go F yourself. I'll follow it up with a Jesus loves you. Not me, not so much right now, but Jesus loves you. Oh, that's why I need him.
You keeping it real, girl, which I love. This is why we are here, because we're so connected and we can be real and raw and authentic and be who we are, right? That's why we're at this table. And so we're going to wrap up as far as our full circle blessings, which was the last chapter of my book. And so I just want to ask you, so what are you most grateful for?
Well, first and foremost, you know, my salvation and God's grace. I mean, this week, as you know, as I shared earlier, my mom died in a car. I hate vehicles. I hate them. And for us believers, you know, we believe that the enemy, there's assignments on our lives and the enemy tries to get at us through things. And the way that the enemy tries to take my family line is through vehicles. And my daughter earlier on this week was in a horrific car accident. She was T-boned by a garbage truck. And it is literally a miracle. If you see the pictures, it is a miracle that my daughter survived. Not a scratch on her head. I'm thankful for my children. I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for the messiness and the message, the test through the testimony. I'm thankful that I'm still figuring it out. Mm. I'm thankful for grace. I'm thankful for discipleship. I'm thankful for learning. I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for all the people that God has brought in my life and keeps bringing in my life. You guys are amazing people that I'm telling you, if it wasn't for making the choice, and in these, through the healing journey, in that choice, I've been hemmed in doing a Bible study. So whatever it is to you, right? Find your thing. For me, it was Bible study. It was getting hemmed in. But I tell you what, I'm still healing, but I'm healed in a lot of ways. And we got to believe in that healing, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if I didn't take the time to do this, I wouldn't be sitting here now with you, right? Because I wouldn't be ready.
Right.
I wouldn't be ready. Mm-hmm. And God has been pruning and breaking and pruning and breaking, and it hurts and it sucks and the last 5 years have been hard. And right now I'm still going through a season that's still difficult, mm-hmm, but that's life. But I'm thankful, so thankful that I have God and I'm not alone, and that I have this amazing team of people and friends and practitioners and community. And you're part of that. That just has me so hemmed in and loved that if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be where I am. And I'm so excited for what's still to come.
Yes. Yes. So thank you for sharing. I'm most grateful just for the fact that I finished the book, celebrating 2 years of the book. I'm grateful to my daughter for planting the seed of this podcast and just podcasting in general. I'm grateful that my family has grown through a lot of things. And I'm grateful I'm so proud of both of them for the work that they're doing in their own lives and that they've healed and they're working through every day. And I see so much, I just see them being better than I was at their age, right? And I'm just grateful that we are blessed as a family. I'm grateful that I'm looking forward to the holidays this year in 2022, you know, and I'm just so grateful that I do have, like you said, community and extensions of what I'm, you know, you don't have to be blood to be family. And I know for a fact that I have a new sister here sitting with me today. So amen. Thank you, Carmen, for being on my podcast today. And so for everyone listening, you know, I just want to say thank you for tuning in. Please follow my podcast, Unspoken Conversations with Candace. You can find my book on Amazon or go to my website at www.candacesanchez.com. I have a swag store now. Anytime you buy swag from my store, it helps me to help other survivor programs. I donate to many great causes in the sexual assault, sexual violence, domestic violence, any type of abuse. I get plugged in. Again, I donate to ncan.org, and So please, and I will put resources. Carmen has some resources for herself too. She's big into the tech space and into diversity and inclusion. She's a healthcare IT dynamic leader. And so her and I are going to be partnering on some other initiatives. And so please stay tuned in, plugged in. And again, thank you for tuning in, and make sure you stay tuned into Unspoken Conversation with Candace. Thank you, everyone. Have a great self-care Saturday, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this conversation about healing, encouragement, and support. Trust that there is power in speaking your truth and sharing your experience with others, because you can have an impact or even save someone's life. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to stay engaged in our Unspoken Conversations with Candace. And if you have been impacted by trauma and need tools to heal, consider purchasing a copy of my book titled Unspoken, available on Amazon. Thanks again, and remember, you're not alone.